What's up, baddie bees? I'm Brianna, mom, wife, serial entrepreneur, and host of the Badass Basic Bitch podcast. Each week, I sit down with a seemingly ordinary woman who's doing extraordinary things, and I get to share her story with you. So let's go. Buckle up as we're going to get real and dive into the shit nobody talks about. Welcome to the Baddie Bee Club.
So yeah, dream big, set yourself some goals, and just connect with one person on LinkedIn. Spend 10 minutes a week just connecting with people or sending a pitch email. Just see what happens, because you never know.
Welcome back to another episode of Badass Basic Bitch. On today's episode, we have Lucy Werner with us, who is based in the UK. She is an author of two books, Hype Yourself and Brand Yourself. And today I am going to be talking with Lucy all about what is PR and how to elevate your brand. So Lucy, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's very exciting to do an international podcast.
I know. I'm so excited to have you. I know it's 9 a.m. my time. It's probably what?
3
p.m. your time. Okay, it worked out. The best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So let's get started. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about yourself to give our listeners an idea of who is Lucy Werner and what is your background in PR?
Okay. I'll do what we call in the UK, if you're revising for your exams, we have these books called the Cliff Notes. So I'll do like the professional same. Cliff. You have the same thing. So I'll do that with the professional Cliff Notes version of my career. So I actually did work experience in PR when I was 17 and fell in love with it. I just didn't realize that those jobs existed. Actually, when I was growing up, I used to watch Terry Hatcher and Superman. I wanted to be Lois Lane. But the whole kind of being a good writer and being a journalist was sort of knocked out of me at school, in academia. So actually PR was like the other side of the fence, where you still kind of got to play with journalists and write and be creative. But there was a whole load of other stuff that you could do. So I've done nearly two decades now in publicity. I worked in some of London's big agencies and in-house. And then I set up my own company 7 years ago called The Worm. It's a boutique PR and brand consultancy. The co-founder of my children now runs the branding and creative division. So he helps people on their brand strategies and their visuals, and then kind of passes them on to me. And I help people with their personal brands and their publicity strategy. And then we have a kind of another arm of the business. So I have the consultancy side, where I sort of cherry pick the businesses that we work with that we want to grow and develop. And then I have a DIY arm called hypeyourself.com, which goes with my first book. And that's all where I do the DIY PR and branding tips, because I just think there's so much that small business and entrepreneurs can do for themselves without even realizing it. So I'm trying to make their lives easy for them. So instead of them starting out and spanking $5,000 a month on an expensive agency and then wondering like, what am I getting in return for this? That actually empowering them as founders, there's so much they can do for themselves.
Yeah, I love that. I love that concept. And I think it's important. I think sometimes when people hear PR, they're like, oh, PR means someone tries to find you a slot in a newspaper or a podcast or a journal, et cetera. But PR is so much more than that, right? It is every time you're posting something on your LinkedIn or your Instagram or your TikTok, like that is PR. Every time you get on a podcast, those are all concepts of PR. Do you think that's fair?
Totally. And actually, it's a thing that people don't distinguish. PR means public relations. It stands for everything that you are doing in the public eye and managing your reputation. Publicity is the art of actually media consulting, where you are pitching somebody to media. So what we would call traditional media would be your broadsheets, your publications. So for you guys, I guess like the bigger ones are going to be like New York Times, Washington Times, like those sort of media pieces. Or like you're saying, like podcasts is kind of like another media outlet that you could be pitching to. But I agree that all public relations is everything from your crisis communications to your speaker, your speaking platforms, what's written in your bio. I was actually consulting with a woman yesterday who's got an amazing business. She went to a Stay Away Women's networking event at a hotel, and somebody asked her what she did, and it got her back up slightly when she told them it took her a long time to explain what she did, and the person misunderstood what the business was. And I was like, actually, you know, it's actually, we in the UK, we always joke that the Americans do the elevator pitch so well, because we call it lifts over here for a start, so we're already screwed. But as Brits, we're terrible at just being really confident and walking straight in and saying, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is why you should be into it. And we almost do this sort of Hugh Grant in Four Weddings and the Funeral, stumbling, trying to be like, oh, I do this. And actually, if you don't mind, I've also done this, which is really rather good as well. And we get over apologetic. And actually, when you do that, people can't connect to you and understand what you're doing. So yeah, even you talking to somebody in a lift and doing your pitch of what your business is PR. And within that as well is your personal brand. So whether you like it or not, if somebody puts your name into Google, that is your personal brand, and you can either choose to control it or not.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I, about a decade ago, I was working for this company as a consultant where they helped push bad publicity down by creating new content, because, you know, when, like you said, you type your name into Google, that's PR, like that's your brand. What's interesting about branding is I have this idea or this theory that in 5 years, like sales or even your work, it's all going to be a digital presence brand of you. Like when you have a product or you're working for a company or you're looking to get a new job, or even putting on a nonprofit event or anything, like even meeting somebody new, the first thing that people are going to be doing is searching for what your digital presence is, what's your digital footprint, and everything there is going to be the first impression. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, I mean, that's how you found me to today's podcast, right?
It is.
Through my digital footprint. Yeah, I always get a bit scared if I meet from somebody in real life and they have no digital footprint whatsoever. I'm like,
same.
Are you in the Secret Service? What is this?
Like, witness protective program? Like, who are you?
Yeah, what is going on? Witness protective program. That's another thing. I'll add that to the roster of what it could be. Yeah. And I think there's also like all these historical things. So, you know, a lot of people will look you up, and Google, if you're using Google, it favors images. And for a lot of people, the first time they put images of themselves up were MySpace, which is really good friends with Google. So actually, if you haven't really done anything online since MySpace, it's a good chance that when you Google your name, that is what's coming up. So little quick hack, Google also loves Twitter and YouTube. So quickly put some refreshed photos on Twitter and YouTube, so when you're having someone's having a Google search, that's what's coming up, not your old MySpace image.
Yeah, that's a very good point. My maiden name definitely brings up some old photos. And then I got married and now I'm remarried and working to change my name.
You've had a rebrand.
Seriously, this is my third rebrand. It's like, come on, why can't I just merge everything?
This is why I won't change my name now that I'm married, because I'm like that. I have my established brand and it's my name on the business as well. So
no, you can't change that. You're good. You stay there. So in terms of your books, what motivated you to write Hype Yourself and Brand Yourself?
Thank you for asking that. It's a really, I love answering this question, especially if you've got a female audience predominantly, because the main reason is that I was looking at what PR books are written by women, and it was virtually zero. If you're looking at the Amazon top 10, it was all men, typically male journalists turned PR experts, whereas like the publicity, marketing and communications industry, at least in the UK, the stats for the UK for the PRCA, which is our governing body, is 66% is women. So I'm like, it's two-thirds dominated by women and none of them are writing books. This is not cool. So that was my main motivation. And I think the second motivation was when I started my business, I actually missed the craft of what I do. I think a lot of people call that position the engineer when you're actually doing the technical bit of it. When I was in the agency land, I was running a team, I was running budgets, had a whole department. I wasn't actually doing the engineer craft bit of publicity anymore. And I started to have this a tiny bit of imposter wobble of like, can I actually still do this? So I started buying PR books to relearn the skills. And to be honest, I thought they were quite crap. I just thought there needs to be more of a toolkit here for somebody that actually says, you write this in the subject line, and this is how you find their email addresses, and this is how you attach the image, and this is where you put the press release. I mean, so many people think PR is writing a press release, turning it into a PDF, and then wanging it out to 300 journalists and being like, that's great done. PR. And I'm like, no.
Spray and pray.
No, say no. One size fits no one, people. We know this. So I actually got myself back in the trenches of it and realized that it wasn't that different to how I'd been doing it a few years previously, and kind of cut my teeth with a few different clients. I was quite lucky. I had some different international clients as well. So I was playing with different types of press and journalists and pitching to TV, pitching to radio, doing picture stories, doing quite a broad range in the traditional PR spectrum. And then around that time, I was meeting a lot of other founders and entrepreneurs, and they just had so many questions about PR. And it was always the same thing. It was always like, how to write a press release. And I was like, that is not the question you should be asking me. The question you should be asking me is, how do I link my PR to my business objectives and make sure that my publicity is working as hard for me as possible? And in big corporate land, you get trained to do your sort of, you do your business strategy first, and then you do your communication strategy, yes, and then you work out your PR tactics. But everybody was coming to me going, I need a press release. And I was like, do you? Is it actually news? Does anybody really care about your rebrand of your website? Does anybody care about your local business award for your cupcake business? Maybe not. And that's okay. There are still ways that you can use it to promote yourself and to, you know, garner engagement from your audience and to get credibility and to do that brand building. It just means it's probably not front page news that necessitates a press release. So it was that education piece of actually start with your business objectives. And I really wanted it to be like, if you can't afford me, or if you just want to learn how to do it in your own time, you can buy this book. It's £15, whatever the equivalent is in the US. I think probably $18 or something, $16, whatever the market rate is these days. And you can learn all the basics for yourself. And then come and ask me a question once you've read that and you've done all the exercises. So that was primarily the first reason. And then when I was writing that book, my partner was made redundant, which was brilliant because it allowed me, he was looking after my first child, one day a week for me to write it for 6 months. And when he joined the business, he was doing the branding and design side. And I realized we were getting the same questions, but the equivalent from the press release was people going, hi, I need a logo. No, you don't. You need a brand strategy and you need to know who your audience is. And why don't we start with choosing a font that you can use across all of your platforms and creating some consistency and thinking about how you want your audience to feel and to engage with them. And then we'll worry about the logo. So for both things with branding and PR, it was the same sort of myths that people think they know about it, that they were starting from the wrong position. So Brand Yourself, we wrote together, but he is French and dyslexic. So I always kind of joke that he is the brain and I'm the brawn of that book.
That's a good partnership there. Well, I think you said some really great things. And I think it's because, like, maybe it's because it's more fun to make a logo than sit down and put together a business strategy, right? Some people may think like going on Google, typing in their names and having those nonsensical awards come up, you know, that makes them feel good and it feeds them. And I think to your point, like when you build your brand, when you build any brand, it's hard. Like it's hard. You have to figure out who you are. And if you're building a personal brand, that may be where you hit a hedge of like, I think I know who I am, but who do I want to be in terms of a brand? And for one great example was myself. In 2021, when the year launched, I said, okay, I have built so many brands. I have worked with some of the greatest brands in the US and international, but now it's time to build my own brand. And I had to figure out like, who am I? I'm so many different components. I'm a mom. I'm a partner. I'm a businesswoman. I'm a friend. I'm a advocate. I'm a woman supporter, woman empowerment. But like, you can't be all of those things and throw it out there. Like you do have to narrow it down. And that can be hard. So how do people even start from the way beginning of who am I? Because especially in like influencer marketing and personal brand, we get so, what is it called? So much glitter around us that we don't know what's our focus point.
Yeah. It reminds me of that scene in Zoolander when he's looking into the puddle being like, who am I? You know, I think I would say if your personal brand is linked to what you want to do as a business, you actually need to almost remove your personal brand strategy first and start with your business strategy and really think about, you know, what do I want to achieve here? Am I trying to get investment? Am I trying to get into retailers? Am I trying to do some influencer marketing with bigger brands? Who are those brands? Who are their audience? Is that an audience match for me? Am I playing with anybody else in that space? Am I completely different? Could I give another reason to for make them to come and work with me over somebody else? And there's so many sort of business goals that I think you need to start with your brand. And I also think increasingly we are seeing, you know, the word authenticity is being bandied around a lot, that it's almost lost the meaning. But the new generation coming through, like we are seeing that people do care about brands that stand for something, and they will pay a premium if there is a, you know, an ethical goal or sustainability goal. There is a lot of cancel culture out there if you're purporting to support one thing and then it's just, you know, it's clearly just a sort of a marketing exercise. Like we've all seen these brands having rainbow avatars for Pride, and then you kind of take a step back and be like, but what's actually happening at the board? You know, over here, I'm not sure if it was the same in the US, but everybody was posting black squares in support of Black Lives Matter after the murder of George Floyd. But what's happening a year on from that at your board level and the top down? It's fine to stand for these things that are happening in society, but how are you actually trickling that through? And then I think when it comes to your business and what you stand for, that needs to start from the leader and drip down through your teams. They've all got a reason to work there. And I think a company that actually I think does it really well in the US is MailChimp. And they constantly, the founders, they're always talking about championing the underdog. They have great tone of voice. They always talk about how their own stories and their beginnings, and they have that family photo. I think one of them worked in his mum and dad's like hairdressers. You know, they have the photo of him as a kid every time, like repeatedly, like this is our story. This is where we came from. This is how we've grown. We champion underdogs, and it continually comes through. And you can see that they champion equality by the businesses that they showcase on their site, by the brands they support. So for me, that's a really beautiful example. They also have loads of free stuff that you can download off their website on tone of voice and editorial guidelines. So actually, they're a brilliant one to kind of copy in terms of they literally put it out there like, this is how we choose what we stand for, what our purpose is, what our mission is, what our tone of voice is. So, you know, if you don't have a big agency budget and you can't spend that money on somebody else doing that for you, you can sit there and do it yourself. And actually, one of the things that we encourage people to do is if you're trying to understand what your values are and you're a solopreneur, maybe ask your friends and family, like, can you give 5 adjectives to describe me? And start to build a bit of a mind map of how other people describe you, and then and pull that together. Because often the way we see ourselves is not, there's, you know, for better and worse, people see other, you know, good and bad things in us that we might not recognize. And then we can pull that through into what our personal brand is and what it is that we stand for. Because you're right, like objectively, we are all these different things, a mother, a business owner, a partner. But actually, I would say like the values that come through might be slightly different. So it might be that there's family, but it could be fun. It could be educational. It could be confident. It could be serious. You know, there's all these different bits that weave through that actually don't even necessarily match the pillars of how we identify ourselves. So yeah, once you start pulling that string, there's so much we can pull out of ourselves.
Yeah, I think you made some really great points there. Something that stuck out was the George Floyd and all of these brands, and honestly, solo brands and big name brands where they're posting the black squares. What's fascinating is I recently was trying to do a study, and I went back and I searched some influencers and other brands to see if they had deleted the black squares. And you would be very surprised. Go back to some of your favorite brands and scroll through. More than half had removed their black squares, which is interesting because to your point, it's like, are you just in it for the movement so people don't get on Reddit and complain about you? Are you in it for the notoriety or are you doing it because it's something that you believe in? And I think that to the authenticity of yourself is don't do something that you're just doing because the rest of society around you, the rest of people in your industry is doing it and it's expected of you. So whatever that may be. In terms of a rebrand, right? How do you know it's time to rebrand? Something that I find as someone who's helped a lot of brands build themselves is this weird transition phase. I call it like the teenage years where you're like in that super awkward or tween years where you're like in that super awkward phase where you're like, I don't really know who I am. I don't really know what I like. I'm just going to throw everything out there and see what sticks. And I just think that's really damaging to your brand in itself because then people come to you and they're very confused. Like, what are you? Are you home and goods? Are you design? Are you mom advice? Are you traveling? Are you drinks? Like, I have no idea what you are. You're just throwing everything out there. When it's time to like rebrand yourself, whether it's your company or your personal solo brand, what are the steps you take?
So one of the things that Adrienne, my partner, always says is get bored of your brand and then rebrand 2 years later. Because there is one thing like what, nobody is looking at us as much as we're looking at ourselves. Like we are the lead performers in our own play. And most people might have a seat at the back and they're kind of having popcorn and chatting to their friends. They're not even really watching the show in the way that we think they are. So I think there's one sort of, I'll give you an example of that. It's when people take Instagram breaks and they come back and they're like, hey, I'm back. And everyone's like,
Miley Cyrus. They pulled a Miley Cyrus, right? Where they're like hiding in a cave and they come out and all of a sudden you're like, Hannah? Montana? What happened to you?
You're just like, but why didn't even know you'd gone, babe? I've just been busy doing my thing.
Oh, that's true, right? That's true. I've actually seen this where people take a lot of Instagram breaks. Yeah. And then they come back and they're like, I'm back. I'm refreshed. And you're like, Oh.
I mean, the Hannah Montana thing is amazing as well. But yeah, I just like find in general that I'm seeing increasingly, especially that sort of female business owner, that like there's, and I've done it. So I'm going to hold my hands up here. Don't cancel me. I've done this. But I'll be like, I'm having a hard time. I'm going to step away. Just step away.
Yeah.
No one's really going to notice. And no one's really looking. And I think, yeah, you need to know what you're about. And I think actually nailing your elevator pitch is so important. It's not just about what your bio is on Instagram or LinkedIn or Facebook or TikTok or Clubhouse, whatever your social media channel of choice is. It's actually also how you introduce yourself. And we can say so many different things about what it is that we do. Like, for instance, when you ask me to tell you a bit about myself, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to go professional, but actually that's just one part of myself. Like there's four or five other different facets to who makes me outside of, you know, professional. And that, I think there's this quite famous joke that somebody tells where someone's like, what do you do for a living? And they reply, I breathe. Because, you know, so often we kind of, especially as women, we try and pigeonhole ourselves into, oh, I'm a mum. No, but actually I have a career. No, but maybe I do both. Actually, but am I a stay-at-home mum? And I'm really proud of that. And I want to talk about that. And there's so much sort of muddling in it. And actually, I think it is just nailing what you are as the overarching, what the top line, what you're about. So I will say I'm a publicity expert for entrepreneurs. Now, you know, I could drill down into that and say, yeah, I'm an author or I teach or I do workshops or I do consultancy or I have retainers, I have a team of freelancers. I could go on and on and on. But ultimately, if you're looking for a PR person and you've just met a PR expert, they're going to be like, oh, cool. Do you do fashion PR and bringing out a new sustainable line? No, I don't. But actually, I know somebody I can connect you with that does do that. Like, you know, it's not, You're never going to necessarily lose it. So I think thinking about what your overarching thing is, you know, I like talking about lifestyle. You know, it doesn't matter then if you're doing a bit of food, a bit of travel, a bit of parenting or whatever it is. Or maybe you're a parenting, you're going all in on parenting. Or maybe, you know, you're a hybrid and actually you love talking about technology and gaming and parenting. You know, it can be both. And actually the more niche you are, actually, I think the more interesting it is.
Totally.
some of my favorite accounts that I follow, they don't have hundreds of thousands of followers. Like I follow this account called Cozy Coupes, and it's someone that takes these red and yellow plastic cars that like the toddlers use, and she just like strips them down and then redoes them up so they're like in vintage colors.
That's so cool.
I think it's got like a couple of hundred followers. I just think it's super geeky and cool, and I'm massively like into like the format of it. I really like, there's a brand called Mean Mail over here, which I love, and it's all about sending like sarcastic cards to your friends. Obviously the Brits, we love the more, for British people, the more we're mean to you, the more we like you, typically.
That's why I love British people.
Well, because we're so mean. So it'll
it's
be
just
like
the
a selection
sense of humor.
Cards.
Love it.
So it would be like, oh great, another, oh great, she sent me one, like, oh great, another book launch, like when it was my book launch. Or we did one for my client, like, oh, another piece of research, eye roll. Like, you know, and her feed is so sarcastic, and she'll talk about what's happening in the news and the news agenda with this slightly sort of sarcastic twist on it all the time. And she just knows her brand so well that it's more than just the pastel palette, which I think is what people might see when they first glance. It's just about everything she talks about embodies this particular tone of voice and this sarcasm, just like this, the Cozy Coupe is like everything about it is her geeking out on how she's going to transform this kid's toy car from a dump that she found it in into something wicked. And you just, you go on this journey. And I think when we're thinking about personal brands, it's almost like not thinking about anybody else and being true to ourselves. And we've said it a thousand times. We know that comparison is the thief of joy, but the best thing you can do is almost go on, create, and don't think about anybody else for a while.
Yes.
And I think like some of the favorite things that I share, like I do a Sunday news roundup of interesting stories that I see in the paper because I'm a PR geek and I love finding funny stories in the paper. Nobody likes it. Nobody engages in it. Like it's my worst performing post every week, but I really enjoy it. And so I put it out there and I'm like, it's cool. It doesn't matter because it's for me. I need to read the papers for my clients anyway. So I'm going to share this with you. And there's definitely like a small niche of people who are into it. But broadly, like people are like, I don't care about this. Like, I don't want to.
Well, and I think that is a great point right here. It's such a great takeaway because there's a reason why you, listener, whoever, cares about their brand and cares about going on Instagram and sharing their lives. And it's because they find joy in it. They find some kind of joy in whether it's putting up frames or putting together newspaper clippings and sharing that with people. And if it fulfills you and makes you happy, then your true authentic self is going to come out. And when you start to tailor to what other people are enjoying, I mean, I guess it's okay to like look at your insights and analytics and see what's doing well and do those things more. But like, don't lose yourself in the effort of doing that. Continue to stay true to yourself, even if it means only 100 people or 3 people, your mom and your best friend are going to like your posts one time. And then hundreds of people or thousands of people are going to like the next post. And I think that can happen a lot with brands where they're like, wow, this is performing really well. I need to do more in this. Focus everything on these types of things, right? Because I think, at least I feel, and I get myself caught up in this a little bit too, is when I'm posting on Instagram and you're like, wow, that did really well. Or wow, look how many saves I got. And it's like a little bit of a hit, like a little bit of a feel of a dopamine. And
yeah, of course it is.
I can see that eating away at some people who put their worth on that.
It's acknowledging that we all have that ego in us that we want it to do well. And so of course, if we're doing something that performs really well, or we accidentally go viral, like that's an amazing moment. And it's natural to get that dopamine hit from that. But I think it isn't like putting your value on it. And if using Instagram is making you feel bad, then don't use that as your channel. Like I actually, whenever I work with any brand, if they say, oh, actually we've got some product photography in an Instagram, I'm like, great. What's your email marketing strategy? And they're sort of like, hmm? And like the bunny ears go up and they're like, what do you mean email marketing? And I'm like, because you don't own your customer data. And like, you know, when there's the Instagram and Facebook outages, it's our annual reminder that we need to be taking our audience from other channels, that it's only as good as that channel's good. I think, I can't remember what show it was on, but there was like a woman who famously built up her following on Periscope. And now Periscope's like the platform that Twitter Spaces is being built on. You know, it doesn't exist anymore.
I listened to your Power Hour episode, and that when you talked about that, it really hit where I was like, that's so true. If you're building everything on Instagram, like Instagram goes away or they change their model completely, or your example where in Twitter, it's like she built this all up and then it went away. It was like, now what?
Yeah, it's terrifying. So yeah, and for me, like I've said it before, but for me, my Instagram and the way I present socially is like my drag alter ego. And like I'm putting on this, it's not a front, but it's like, it is this, I've got my colorful shells in the background. I always use big, bright colors. It's my fun place where I'm being of service to other people and I'm helping them to promote themselves. And if I feel like I'm not feeling it, I'll just duck out for a bit. Not always announced, sometimes unannounced. But I just, you know, I just duck out for a bit and that's cool. And actually the best ideas I get for posts is not when I'm there going, I need to post every day. It's when I'm at a museum or I'm at the cinema or I'm chatting to an old friend or something funny happens or, and it's the weirdest stuff like works. Like I did a reel this week where I just shared behind the scenes of what I do in my day. It was, I thought, so dull. I was like, this is my Monday.
I would love that.
I'm doing a workout in my office, then I do some banking, then I take the dog for a walk, then I do some more finance, and then I basically sat at my computer typing. That's been almost the best reel I've ever done. I've had ones where like literally I'm changing outfits, trying to coordinate myself to Genesis. And like nothing. And this one, I was like, that was the most easy reel I could ever do. And it was only because I did a series of stories where I was like, does anyone really actually want to see behind the scenes? And everyone was like 100% yes. And I was like,
they do. People, well, I think that's the, there's something about like the, what's it like, Instagram reality, right? And I think people are starting to get sick of Instagram perfection. Yeah. And they're like, give me the messy behind the scenes, real life stuff that you do and not like this perfect picture of you smiling next to the podcast being like, another episode, you know?
Yeah.
It's like they want to see what it looked like when I was trying to set up for our podcast, Lucy, where I was like, yeah, pulled out.
Yeah, that would have been fun. I had things falling off the ceiling. I couldn't stop snorting.
I pulled out 15 headphones. I was like, I have to try 15 headphones because none of these are working. You know,
it was full glamour. I think the other thing as women we have to think about, because I was asked about this recently in Clubhouse, do I feel like women live up, are held to a different standard than men when it comes to their personal brand.
And
I was like, yeah, they are. So I had this sort of thing of like, would my guy mates share this? Because my guy mates are quite liberal and quite open-minded and they'll talk about things like mental health or shared parenting. You know, they're quite on the feminine edge of masculinity, you could say. But I do have this thing of like, would my male friend feel like they need to do this or say this or act in this way as a kind of ripcord before I press go? And really, I use this analogy quite a lot of like, it's about showing a bit of ankle. And there are certain things in my life that are deeply personal that I do share and I do talk about because I've made a choice that either, I mean, there's a thing of like, you know, you don't talk from the wound, you talk from the scar. I talk quite a lot about my second child being born with congenital heart defects because I needed my support from my community at that time. And also, I just thought it was important to share that journey because I was launching my first book whilst that was going on. I would have felt so fraudulent to have not been discussing it in that moment. It was too fake. There are other things that have happened to me or my family or people close to me where I've chosen, actually, that's not something I'm going to share because when you put information about yourself in the public domain, you'll then inadvertently find you'll be at an event and somebody will go, oh, so how is X situation, and it knocks you off guard because you think, oh, I'm just here to talk about PR tips. And now you're asking me something deeply personal, but I've actually shared that in the public domain. So it's not deeply personal or traumatic or triggering to this person. They're just showing interest and they care about you. So I do think it is, where possible, try not to share too much from your vulnerability until you have healed from it and you are ready to be in a place that people can talk to you about it. But there are obviously times where you know, we might need support and it's okay. But just, you know, I think that would be my kind of caveat to people is don't feel like you have to share everything that's happening. And the reality is that most people have got stuff going on at all times. So even when you're looking at everybody and you think their lives are perfect and they're having a great time, they're all fighting things, big or small. They might not be as big as your things. But I think, you know, like we are talking more openly now about like baby loss awareness. And we have these like mental health weeks and we're opening up about these sort of things in a way that we weren't before. Like to me, I think it's kind of BS that we're told to not tell people that we're pregnant until 12 weeks when the reality is that first 12 weeks is hideous. And that is probably the time that we want to tell people.
That
and
you the need the most support.
Exactly, right? And once you hit second trimester, you know, people can start to tell anyway. And if you don't make it second trimester, you're probably going to need some time off work and the professional people around you are going to know anyway. So for me, it's like this thing of like, you know, what we do and don't talk about privately versus publicly, I think is still a lot to be unpicked in the next decade for women, that's for sure. And the bit that I'm excited about is I'm 38 now. I've got friends who are sort of perimenopausal or menopausal. And I think, wow, like the menopause was just not even something discussed 10 years ago. And I think it's amazing that companies like ASOS are now doing like flexible working for women going through the menopause. And I'm just like, wow, like if we can get more women at the top making policies for women working, it's going to be amazing.
Well, and I think that's probably why things are changing is because there are more women who are more comfortable talking about it. And I think the pregnancy thing is a great example where you were told, like when I got pregnant, it was like, well, just don't tell anybody until you hit your 12 weeks. Don't tell anybody you're going to be. And I had a miscarriage, my first child who it took me years to get pregnant. And so it was really hard. And I was like, I have to just deal with this and quietly and I felt in shame and it was very depressing. And I think, like now it's very different where I love when women share their stories and communicate their pregnancies, miscarriages, losses, whatever that may be, because there's people out there that find comfort in that. And I think definitely. You make a great point. It's like, share what you're comfortable with and share what you're ready to talk about besides just in your phone or in a camera. Like there might be people that meet you in person and want to have a discussion about it and be ready to talk about that. Because I do feel like when you open that box, you're opening, it's an open invitation to talk about it. And not necessarily at any moment. You can always say, I'm not in the space right now to have a conversation about this, but people may feel more at ease to bring it up to you. So very interesting. The other thing that's interesting about the women and men in terms of their brand, there's this one image or one post that always got me going where it is a man who's just, you know, the woman goes out for a night with her friends and they're like, who's taking care of your child? She's like, my husband. And they spend the rest of the night like talking about how amazing of a dad he is, how amazing of a husband he is. And wow, he's so great with your kids. He's like, no, he's a fucking dad.
He's so good dad. He's babysitting. No, he's not babysitting. He's the dad.
Yeah, he's not a fucking babysitter. He's a dad. And he's just doing what dads are supposed to do. But if the roles were reversed, if the male came out, what is the likelihood that his friends would be like, who's watching your kids? You know? And then if he was like, oh, my wife, that they'd be like, wow, she's amazing with those kids. Like, she's a great wife. Like, no, she's a fucking mom. And I think that one example does show in terms of brand, especially solo brand, of women and men and how different it is. And there's a lot of pressure on women to show up differently because the expectations are just so high.
100%. Like I had a client story get pulled from a newspaper. He is a man talking about how he changed the maternity leave of his business after he had his kid, but it couldn't run on the day it was supposed to run because they already had a man talking about looking after their children that day. So it has to happen a few weeks later, so they don't have two men talking about childcare at the same time. Whereas I was thinking, how many times do you read articles about women in business juggling children or anything, not even women in business, just mothers in the same newspaper? It's not an issue. And actually on the flip side for that, I was talking to a friend who she filters for a podcast.
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting because like everyone is having a baby. Well, not everyone, but it's like a disclaimer, right? Like, it's not just I had a baby and X, Y, and Z. Maybe just focus in on the X, Y, and Z instead of disclaiming it or trying to hype it up with, I also had a baby when I was doing this, because I think we all agree having a baby in general is really hard, but the other things you're doing as well are pretty amazing too. So
yeah, I think, like, just as women, we need to have confidence in what we're doing, and we can be proud mothers. But I think the narrative of, I had a child, so I need to change my business to fit my mothering is a narrative that's been overdone. If it was a guy doing it, that would be very interesting. Any men out there who want to start, like, changing their narratives of changing their businesses so they could hang out with their kids more, lovely. We'd all like to see a bit more of that. But I think as women, it's like, actually, we all see other women having to change what their careers and their businesses are because of having children and because of motherhood. And actually, it's the stories that we don't hear that are the ones that are more engaging. So it's thinking about what's the unique narrative to you. And I think sometimes people really overthink what that is. But every person is in a unique situation, from their upbringing to their education to maybe it's a really interesting job pivot. They've gone from nursing into beauty, or, you know, whatever that pivot might be. There's so many transferable skills from different jobs. So actually, I think the more niche and weird your career journey or your upbringing or your family life is, the better the story. Don't worry about trying to find the commonality all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. On the other side of it, I do, to answer your question, I do have someone that reviews my podcast submissions for, like, interest. And I probably get like 15% men who want to be on my podcast.
Oh, interesting.
I'm like, I think you've misunderstood this podcast.
Well, look, here it goes, right? So people always want to know, the thing I also get asked the most about is how to pitch themselves. So if somebody wanted to pitch themselves to be on your podcast, what are the absolute no-nos and what are the things you would like to see?
Oh, for me? Are you asking me?
Yeah. Tell your audience, tell the people what you want.
Yeah. Like badass basic bitches, you know, I don't want to feature men. I think men have so many platforms that they can be featured on and tell their story and talk about how amazing they are. Like, go do that over there. But this is about featuring women who look ordinary, but who are doing amazing things, whatever those things may be. They could be activists that are changing their community viewpoints, or they could be multi-millionaire businesswomen who found something that they were passionate enough about to make a multi-million dollar company with. So it varies, but, like, it's all about the bitches for me.
When I saw that you asked to interview me, I was like, I've got the basic bit down, so I can I can definitely check that box, babes. I'm there.
You are more than just basic. So Lucy, before we close out, if listeners only left here with one thing, what would it be?
I would say set yourself a dream big goal and work towards it. And what I mean by that is, when I work with people, I will say to them, what do you want? And they'll be like, a TED talk. And I'm like, okay, cool. What's the message you want to share? And they'll be like, oh, I don't know. I just wanted a TED talk. And then you drill them a bit deeper and you're like, okay, what do you actually want? And actually, it's maybe they want to do their own podcast, or they have a dream podcast they want to be on, or they want to be on Oprah, or they want to be on Ellen or Saturday Night Live, or actually they want to be a published international author, whatever it may be. But if you don't sit down and actually say, this is what I want and this is why, you won't take those steps towards hitting it. So, like, for me, there's a magazine in the UK, I think you can get it in the US as well, called, like, Courier. And that, I really wanted to be in that magazine. It's a magazine for modern business. I love how they talk about businesses, because for me, most business publications are really stuffy and corporate and grey suits. And I just don't, that's not the world I play in. It's not the world I want to read about in business. So for me, it was a cool, creative, entrepreneurial place I wanted to be in. So when I got that, I was like, yeah, I've got it. And then there was a podcast I really wanted to be on in the UK over here. And I got that. And then recently I'm like, I haven't set any goals for myself of stuff I want to be in next. So I'm not moving towards being anywhere because I'm not doing it. And actually, you getting in touch with me really reignited in me that the world has opened up again and I can travel and I can think outside of the UK and I should be thinking more internationally because there are small businesses everywhere, not just in East London. And to be honest, all of my clients aren't based here. All of our clients are international anyway. So yeah, dream big, set yourself some goals and just connect with one person on LinkedIn. Spend 10 minutes a week just connecting with people or sending a pitch email. Just see what happens because you never know.
Well, I love that. I think that's great advice to leave with. Lucy, you are one badass basic bitch. Thank you so much for being on today's episode.
Thank you for having me. Can I just speak to you each week and just get an audio note from you saying that to me? That felt really good.
Yes, I'm going to send you a voice recording that reminds you every day, Lucy, you are one badass basic bitch.
I love this. You could start charging for this. This could be your new business.
I will take that.
Thank you so much. And if anybody ever has any like PR questions, I'm Lucy Werner PR on almost all social media channels. So feel free to pick my brain. If it's too long, I'll answer it in a blog post or something else later on. But it's really good for me to get questions because it helps me with the content that I need to create.
Awesome. As always, thank you for listening. Check us out on Instagram at @badassbasicbitch. And thank you to Saw and Sign, our production studio. We'll see you next week.